No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard Time on this Tuesday, June 6th, 2017. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us. After this weekend's terror attack in London, Prime Minister Theresa May has gone beyond asking social media companies to vet content more actively. She's raised the specter of holding these social media platforms legally accountable. Facebook has responded to the Prime Minister's call to action, saying it'll make its platform, quoting here, a hostile environment for terrorists. But if social media companies know or should know that they provide material support for terrorist activity, should they be held liable for any actions resulting from this support? Is private industry liable for hosting and ignoring, perhaps, dangerous online material? Stephen Vladek is professor of law at the University of Texas School of Law. Welcome to Standard.
Thanks for having me.
What do you think? Is there a parallel there?
You know, I think there's a parallel at a very high level of abstraction, but I think, you know, one of the most important differences when it comes to the United States and the United Kingdom is our very different speech traditions, right? The United Kingdom does not have nearly the same historical or constitutional commitment to the freedom of speech that we do.
Right.
And I think that that has pros and cons. And I think one of the cons is that we have to have freedom for the speech that we hate just as much as we have freedom for the speech that we love. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we risk, you know, blurring that critical distinction.
Okay. Now, let's talk about this in the context of you have social media platforms based in the United States, Facebook and Twitter. There's no First Amendment, of course, as most people know, in the UK or anything like it in several other Western democracies, France, Germany, and the like. If these countries decide that the threat of terrorism is so great that they are now going to say, we're going to outlaw Facebook and Twitter, doesn't matter what our traditions of discourse are here in the States, that's going to have a profound impact on these companies, would it not?
I think it will. And I think, you know, that's probably the extreme reaction. I think the intermediate reaction is the one that we might see progress toward.
Give me an example. What do you mean by intermediate reaction?
So I think we're seeing, you know, proposals to have reporting requirements, right, where the Facebook, the Twitter, the, you know, the social media companies of the world take on some kind of affirmative obligation to not only police some of the more vile and offensive speech on their platforms, but to actually facilitate the reporting to government organizations. I think that's probably the more modest move we're going to see some of our friends overseas make. And I think that'll be an interesting example for us to study. How does that work?
But there's nothing that could really stop any Western democracy fearful of terrorism from saying, no, we're just simply not, we're going to prohibit, we're going to close our doors to social media companies. And in a way, you could even, extension, say that these social media companies, in a sense, have tried to export our values about free speech abroad, and this now represents a curbing of that.
We'll see. I mean, I think the jury's still out on where the equilibrium is going to be at the end of this conversation. But I do think that there's an important balance here between not shooting the messenger, right, which in this case is often just these platforms that are providing a means. You know, as much as a Facebook or a Twitter is providing a mechanism for terrorist groups to communicate, they're also facilitating pro-democracy movements, right, in countries with more of an authoritarian tradition. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater here and understand that even outside the U.S., there's value to these platforms. The question is, how do we make sure that we're not making it too easy for those who would use these platforms for evil?
I was thinking about other platforms where illicit material has been exchanged. For instance, there's Kim.com and his Pirate Bay, I believe, and for the most part, I mean, he's been chased around the world for allowing the exchange of copyrighted content. We saw the Silk Road, for example, which got its start here in Texas, no less. These people were labeled public enemy number one.
But I think there's a difference, and I think there's a legally and morally meaningful difference between a platform that is simply providing a mechanism, a posting board, a channel through which people can communicate, which Congress has protected through what's called Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act of 1996, and the more active, engaged facilitators of unlawful activity.
Professor, you mentioned Section 230 of the Telecommunications Act of 96. I suppose the pertinent language here, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. How has that been interpreted?
Well, basically, it's been interpreted as a shield against civil lawsuits, against criminal lawsuits, seeking to basically implicate them.
And there have been cases in which, like, the parents of a victim have tried to sue Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, and I think the theory is that we really shouldn't suppress the platform simply because particular messages on the platform are themselves illegal or lead to illegal activity down the road.
But this says you shouldn't be treated as a publisher or speaker, but could you nonetheless be held accountable, say, at a time of war?
So I think it depends on what you're being held accountable for. I mean, are you facilitating some act of espionage or some act of treason during wartime?
Certainly, you could be held accountable for that, it seems to me.
I would think, but then not necessarily because of what you're publishing, but because you're actually an accessory to the underlying criminal activity. And I think we have to be very careful to police the line between, on the one hand, simply publishing and facilitating the exchange of ideas, which has salutary effects with regard to promoting democracy as much as it might have, you know, negative effects elsewhere, and on the other hand, being an active participant in a criminal conspiracy. Simply having a platform, I think, doesn't get you all the way to the ladder. And I think that's what Section 230 is there to protect.
Stephen Vladeck is a professor of law at the University of Texas School of Law. I hope we can have you back on the program real soon.
I'd be delighted.